Hi everyone, this is Dr. Margaret Paul, and I'm very pleased to be on this call with you to talk about raising healthy children. It's one of my favorite topics, very near and dear to my heart since I worked so hard as a parent to raise healthy children. And I see my children working hard to raise my grandchildren healthy. So I'll be discussing this topic, and I'm going to include both physical and emotional health. And then I'll be taking some questions from those of you on the phone, as well as answering some of the questions that people wrote in. And halfway through the presentation, I'll take a couple of minutes to explain what we offer to you for support. You don't have to buy anything to get value out of the class, but we do offer a lot of products for support. So we're going to talk now about what creates both physical and emotional health. And from my experience, it's a three-pronged issue. It's about nutrition, exercise, and your state of mind. So first I'm going to talk about nutrition. I think this is a fairly big topic now in our society because there are so many unhealthy people, so many unhealthy children, and I think that our society has gotten way, way off track regarding what creates health. One of my rules of thumb that makes it sort of easy is that if people didn't eat it a few hundred years ago, then it's likely not very healthy to eat it now. And that would include just about everything on supermarket shelves. If you go into a supermarket and you look on the shelves, you see that just about everything is packaged and processed and colored and preserved and filled with pesticides. It's not what anybody ate a few hundred years ago. And one of the things that's so very, very important to understand is that our bodies are not geared. They weren't created to handle things that are not natural. And so when you put things in a child's body that has been processed and preserved and colored and all of that, their body has a very hard time, just like with adults. The body has a very, very hard time managing things that are not natural to the body. And so that's just the first thing off the bat, is to think about, if you are buying things like that out of the stores, to think about starting to eat organic, which I've done for 50 years, because when I was very young, I read some books on it, and I realized this is got to be a really, really important thing. So I've been eating organic for 50 years. My kids were raised that way. And to just try and stay away from the genetically modified foods, which are really, really terrible for kids and for adults, and anything that's been sprayed or colored or preserved. So that's just kind of a blanket thing, is to eat the way people did a few hundred years ago. And then we get down to what creates individual health. And I don't believe that there's just one way of eating, because people are different and people's bodies are different and people come from different backgrounds and their bodies need different things. And so it's very, very important to tune into your kids to see what really gives them energy, what makes them alert, what makes them feel good, what helps them sleep well. Some of us are carbohydrate types, where we need a lot more complex carbohydrates, vegetables, maybe some grains, some fruits, and other people need more protein. Now, this doesn't mean that if you're a vegetarian, you can't be a vegetarian. You certainly can't. It just means that you have to make sure that the children are getting enough protein in their diets, because some children just need more than others, and it's up to the parent to tune in and to see. There's actually a really good test called the metabolic typing test. You can go online and take it, or you can get the book, The Metabolic Typing Diet, and take a test and see whether you're a protein type, a mixed type, or a carb type. And it's very helpful to take that test and to see what you are and what your kids are, so that you really know how to support them in their health and well-being. One of the things that I think creates a huge amount of health problems in our country is people buying meats and produce and poultry and eggs from the factory farms, because I don't know if you read the study that just came out from Harvard where they linked pasteurized milk with cancer. And that's very interesting to me because my kids were raised on raw milk, on raw milk that came from cows that have been pastured and eat organically, and that's what we still do. Some people do really well on that. In fact, the Mayo Clinic used to, in the early 1900s, when people were sick and they came to the Mayo Clinic, they put them on a raw milk diet. And for some people, it's extremely beneficial. But the pasteurized milk and pasteurized dairy, as far as I'm concerned, is not even a food. They brought it into being so that these the dairy manufacturers don't have to have clean cows and healthy cows. And the same thing with the meat. You know, they fill them through they fill them with hormones, and they feed them pesticide-filled grains, and none of it is good and healthy. And especially children who are growing, I think that a lot of that is responsible for the obesity in our country, you know, along with things like the soft drinks and the, you know, the corn syrup and, you know, the high fructose corn syrup and all of that. There's just so many ways that our country has created unhealthy foods. And one of the things that I want to suggest to people is that you do the research and really see what you're putting in your own bodies and really see what you're putting in the bodies of your children, because it makes a huge, huge difference in health and well-being. And of course, one of the main problems with so much of the food that kids eat is about sugar. And one of the things that's important to understand about sugar is that if you were to eat like the plain sugar cane, the pure sugar cane, I mean, you couldn't eat tons of it, but if you ate some of it, you'd be fine, because it's a whole food and it has the molasses in it. And the molasses, which is what they take out when they refine sugar, has all the B complex in it. And just like a candle flame cannot burn without oxygen, it'll go out, sugar can't burn without the B vitamins that are taken out when they refine it. And so what happens when kids eat sugar, and adults, is that you're pulling nutrients out of the body, a lot of nutrients out of the body. And B vitamins especially are important for the muscles and for the heart muscle. And so when kids are allowed to eat soft drinks with the, you know, the corn syrup and the sugar and all of that, they are depleting their bodies, not only creating obesity, but depleting their bodies from the nutrients that they need to be healthy. And then one of the other things that has gone on around health and nutrition is vitamins. I found this out fairly recently, that synthetic vitamins are like drugs. They're not something that you use every day. You use, like, if you need high vitamin C, if you get sick, you use it sparingly, but, you know, use it just when you're sick. But that the only kinds of vitamins that are really healthy for the body are those that come from whole foods, not that come from anything synthetic. And in fact, one of my clients recently who got pregnant, and the doctor put her on vitamins, but he put her on synthetic vitamins, and she got violently ill. And then she talked to me, and I told her about the natural vitamins, and it made a huge difference to go off the synthetic ones and go on the natural ones. So this is, you know, a whole lot of information about nutrition. And I, you know, if you're interested in it, as I've been for many, many years, I really want to suggest that you do some research, do some reading. See, you know, what you would like to do, how much raw food. I mean, I think that people need at least half raw food in their diets, because that's where the nutrients are. And the highest density nutrient food is vegetables. And so if you're not having fresh vegetables, raw vegetables, cooked vegetables at every meal, you're missing the highest nutrient-dense food there is. And what the body really needs is nutrient-dense food, which, of course, something like Coca-Cola has no nutrient density at all. And so I really want to suggest that you do some reading and learn about what would really be healthy for your particular body. Some people can have a lot of fruits, others can't. I can't eat very many fruits, but I eat tons of vegetables. The only meats that I eat are from farms that have that are grass-finished organic beef, which is very high in the omega-3s. Some people don't need meat. I do. My body doesn't function well without it. Some people do fine without it. But if you do eat it, please look into the organic grass-finished. Even though it's more expensive, all of this may be more expensive, and I understand that that may be a problem for people. But in the long run, believe me, you're going to save so many bills on your kids' health and on having to stay home from work because of being sick. I mean, there's just so many ways you will save money by eating healthy and by making sure that your kids eat healthy. And they will if it's in the house. I mean, if you're the role model, and if you're eating junk, they're going to eat junk. And if you tell them they have to eat healthy and you go out and eat junk, that just isn't going to work. And you're in charge of what you bring into the house. And so you get to bring in what I did with my kids is I only bought what I wanted them to eat. And I didn't police anything in the house. They could eat anything they wanted, but the only things that were in the house were things that I wanted them to eat that were healthy. And so I never policed them about food, and they never had to, like, eat everything off their plate, or, you know, if I made something they didn't like, they didn't have to eat it, and they could go get something else. But whatever they could get in the house was healthy, so it was never a problem for me. Okay, I could go on and on about nutrition because I love that topic, but I'm going to move on to exercise very briefly. I mean, obviously, one of the problems with kids is that they're indoors, they're watching TV, they're playing video games, they're on their iPad, their computer, and they're not moving. And that is not at all good. And it's vitally important for you as the parents to role model finding a form of exercise that you love, that you can keep up, so that you're role modeling for them that they need to get out and do some form of exercise and make sure that you provide that. I mean, when I was a kid, it was just, you know, we didn't have the computers and all that stuff. We were outside all the time playing and got tons and tons of exercise. I can't believe how many hours of TV kids watch. And that's the other issue is screen time. If you do the research on screen time, you're going to find that that also contributes not just to lack of exercise, but to overall lack of health, lack of concentration. In fact, they found that kids before the age of 11 and 12, it really affects their ability to learn if they're watching, you know, if they're having too much screen time. So you might want to notice that. And I know it's hard to limit, but, you know, if you really love your kids, you're going to make it okay for them to be mad at you, but limit the time that they have on their computers or on TV. And then finally, we're going to get to the state of mind. And actually, what research shows is this is the most important aspect of health. Research is indicating that 90% of illness is stress-related, and that 90% of the people that come into doctor's offices are there for stress. And so this is a huge issue, is stress. And kids are very stressed these days. They've got a lot on their plates. They go to schools where they put a lot of pressure on them, and they feel stressed in their homes when their parents are having problems. They're stressed because they're not eating well, because they're not getting enough exercise. There's just a lot of stress on kids. And so, from my point of view, one of the very, very best ways that parents can promote physical and emotional health in their own children is to promote it in themselves. And here's where inner bonding comes into the picture. In that if you really learn and practice the inner bonding process on a daily basis, and you're really learning how to take responsibility for your own feelings rather than being a victim, rather than being angry, rather than being resistant, or sulky, or gloomy, or withdrawn, or compliant, or any of these ways that the wounded part of us deals with stress, or turning to addictions, turning to food, alcohol, drugs, TV, work, whatever, staying locked up in your head and not being present in your body, making other people responsible for you. If you're role modeling all of those ways of abandoning yourself, then that's what your children are going to learn. They're going to learn to abandon themselves. They're going to learn to control in the same ways that you control. They're going to learn to give themselves up in the same ways you do. And doing that creates anxiety. It creates depression. It doesn't create aliveness and vitality in children. And so if you want your children to be healthy, then you've got to take responsibility for your own health, for your nutrition, your exercise, and learning and practicing the inner bonding process. By doing that, you develop your loving adult. You teach them how to develop their loving adult. They will learn what you do. They're not going to learn so much what you say, but they're going to learn what you do. And when you learn how to truly take responsibility for your happiness, your peace, your joy, when you learn how to overcome your anxiety and live in peace and joy, they will learn to do that, and that will have a huge, huge effect on their health. I just came back a couple days ago from a five-day intensive in Santa Barbara, and I found out at the end of the intensive that there were like four people who decided, now I'm not suggesting that people do this, because if people are on antidepressants or anti-anxiety pills, you don't just go off of them. You taper off. But I found out that for some reason, four people individually decided not to take their medication at the intensive. And all of them felt fantastic. Their heads were clear. They didn't have any withdrawal symptoms. They were so excited. But, you know, again, I don't recommend just going off of them like that. But these people did fantastically well. I mean, if they had asked me, I would have said no, because I don't believe in going off drugs just, you know, all of a sudden. But apparently it worked fine for them. And that was amazing to me that these four people had been on antidepressants for so long, or anti-anxiety pills, and they were able to get off of them and feel so good as a result of learning how to take responsibility for their own feelings, learning how to stop putting a lid on who they really are and learn to value who they really are. And that's one of the most important things you can do for your kids, is to help them learn to value who they truly are and follow their own soul. It's one of the problems that I think is huge in our society that's going on in so many of the schools, where kids are not allowed to be who they are, where they have to sit there and they have to comply and they have to conform, and they start to get kind of duller and duller and more bored, because they're not being supported in being all they can be, unless they're in an alternative school or they're homeschooled. They're not being supported in being all they can be. In fact, I'm reading a fantastic book called In Defense of Childhood, which, I mean, it's just blowing me away. I just burst into tears at every other page at what he's talking about as far as raising children who know who they are, who can find their passion and their sense of purpose and their creativity and their aliveness, who are not being stifled in terms of having to deny their feelings, what brings them joy, what creates passion in them. And I really want to recommend this book, In Defense of Childhood. The subtitle is Supporting Kids' Inner Wildness. And that he's calling the essence, what we call the essence in inner bonding, the core self, he's calling inner wildness. And it's not wildness in terms of acting out. It's wildness in terms of creativity and passion and aliveness and joy. And I think this is one of the greatest things that we can do for the health of our children, is to support them in being all that they can be. But in order to do that, we have to be supporting ourselves in being all that we can be. We have to learn about who we are in our essence in order to truly see and value and cherish their essence. Okay, I'm going to take a couple minutes just to go through what we have, and then I'm going to do some work with some people. So one of the things that I do is I have a support group. It's a 6-week group, and we have 8 people in the group for an hour and a half once a week, and that's the least expensive way of working with me one-on-one, because I work with the members one-on-one, and it's like a little bitty intensive, because everybody else gets to experience my work with people, and it's often easier to see yourself when it's not about you, when you're hearing somebody else's work. So it's a really good experience to be in the group. If you're interested in that, you can call our office at 888-6-INNER-BOND. We have a wonderful membership site with a sliding scale from $9.99 to $49.99, depending on the benefits that you want in membership. We have an incredible program called SelfQuest, which you can find at selfquest.com, that teaches the inner bonding process in a very, very deep and profound way. The program sells for $5.97. We can also sell in modules for $197, $297, and $197 for each module. And if that is beyond your price, you can apply for financial assistance, where you get it for about half price. We have the Intimate Relationship Toolbox at innerbonding.com. The first 2 weeks are free, as well as a permanent weight loss e-course, and the first 2 weeks are free in that. I do individual and conjoint sessions on the phone and on Skype, as do other facilitators. And so if you need help, there is help available. I do 5-day intensives. I just finished one in Santa Barbara, and the next one is in April. And that is on the website. Be sure that you've taken our free course at innerbonding.com/welcome. It's a really good free course and gives you the basis of the inner bonding process. So, again, you can call 888-6-INNER-BOND for any information that you need. Okay, we have quite a few people on the line and quite a few people on the webinar, and I won't be working with those of you that are listening on your computer, but those of you that are on the phone, if there's anybody here that would like to do some individual work with me, you can press *7 to talk and *6 to mute. So if anybody would like to press *7 to talk.
Hello.
With me. Yes, hi, what is your name?
Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. How can I help you?
You know what? I have some issues that I'm not that happy about. I have gotten into the habit. I think there's some, you know, there's been some blaming and guilting going on in my marriage, and I kind of take the guilt, and I think, you know, initially I couldn't understand how I was like, wow, everything was kind of my fault. If there was a bucket tipped over, it was, you know, it didn't really matter what it was, and was baffled, but kind of a people pleaser. And now I have found that I do this to my children, and it's very upsetting. This didn't used to be my basic nature, but I see that, you know, I've kind of been living in chaos, and so when things go awry, I kind of snap and lash out, and it's not the best thing. It's, you know, I'm blaming them for things that are, you know, why did you kick me? Well, they accidentally kicked me, but I'm kind of coming from a wounded place, and so, you know, not behaving badly.
So, Tammy, it sounds to me like when you get blamed, you don't know how to take care of yourself. Is that right? That you haven't learned? Yeah.
I just kept thinking, wow, yeah. Yeah, somehow there must be some way I'm guilty. Somehow I didn't see it, but somehow I got to try harder.
And so this is where learning and practicing the inner bonding process would come in, because it, as long as you do not know how to take loving care of yourself, and as long as you're accepting the guilt, which is actually a form of control, the wounded self has learned to accept guilt as a form of control, but it creates a lot of anxiety and stress inside when you do that. Then when your kids act out, as kids will inevitably do, that part of you that you haven't been taking care of, that you have been telling you're doing something wrong, you must be doing something wrong, that part of you gets triggered, and you take it out on your children. You're not going to be able to stop taking it out on your children until you're taking better care of yourself. And so I really want to encourage you to learn and practice inner bonding and start to understand what it means to speak up for yourself, to not accept the blame, to not accept, you know, that it's all your fault. This is a process. It does take time. But, your little girl inside is angry. She's angry at you for not standing up for her. And then that anger gets projected out onto your kids. And then they're going to learn to do the same thing. It's just handed down from generation
right.
to generation. And so see if you can tune inside right now to that little girl in you and ask her what she's angry at you about. Can you do that?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe like I didn't ever have her back, maybe.
Right. You don't have her back, exactly. And she's angry with you that you don't have her back. And then when your kids act out, what happens? Where does that anger go?
Right.
It goes right out at them, doesn't it?
I think I'm replaying the scenario, which is
right,
upsetting.
Right. And so inner bonding is about learning to have your back, learning to speak up for yourself, learning to take loving care of yourself, learning to bring yourself joy. And from that place where you're all filled up with love inside, that's when you will be able to have patience with your children.
Well, and I think that's somehow in my adult relationship is somehow I thought, I just always have to be nice. I just have to be nice. And so,
yeah.
That didn't allow me to speak up.
That's right.
Maybe.
And you were probably trained to do that as I was. I was trained to just be nice and go along and comply and give myself up.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, when inner bonding came into my life, I realized how enraged my little girl was at me. Because being nice is not the same thing as being loving. Being nice is a form of control. It's a manipulation.
Well, probably to avoid rejection or something. I don't know.
That's right.
And not hurt other people's feelings. I was taught, whatever you do, don't hurt anyone else's feelings.
Exactly. But you're hurting yourself, and you're convincing yourself that being nice is being loving, but being nice isn't. Being nice is controlling. Being nice is trying to have control over other people not rejecting you. And you're so afraid of other people rejecting you because you're rejecting your own self. And all of this can get healed through learning and practicing inner bonding.
So how is when you're saying, okay, so
yeah, no,
being nice isn't loving. Can you help me get a handle on that?
No, because you're being nice to try and control how people feel about you.
Okay.
And we can't be loving and be controlling at the same time.
Okay.
Being controlling isn't being loving to yourself, and it's not being loving to others, and it's not authentic. You're being nice to try and control how people feel about you.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot on the website about that. There's a lot of articles on caretaking, which is what you're doing. And look up caretaking in the Google search on the website and read those articles, and you'll begin to understand it more, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Tammy. Is there anybody else online? And then I'm going to take a couple questions that people have written in. Anybody else online who'd like to talk?
Hi, this is Simone.
Hello, Simone.
Hi.
How can I help you?
Yes, I want to know how we could deal and support our children when we have to go away on for work. And my daughter gets really upset. She doesn't want me to go away, but I need to go for work. And I would like to know how I could support her.
Well, you know, it is a hard thing. How old is your daughter?
She's seven. But she's seven. I work from home, so I would say that I'm with her and around her 90% of the time. But I feel it's healthy that she, you know, we spend some time apart, and I also do my work and what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, and so it's very important for you to, you know, just validate her feelings and say, yes, I understand that it's painful for you, but, and that's it. I mean, there's nothing more for you to do but just validate that, yes, she doesn't like it. But if you're with her that much, if she's 7 years old and you're with her that much of the time, there may be something else going on. She may be trying to control you by being so upset. And it's very, very important for you not to go to guilt, for you to stay true to yourself. You know, this is your passion. This is what you want to do. And again, not to get hooked into taking responsibility for her feelings. She needs to learn to take responsibility for her own feelings. And if you, I don't know if you know the inner bonding process, but it would be very, very helpful if you learn to do the inner bonding process for yourself, because then you can teach it to her. And seven-year-olds can easily learn inner bonding. They can learn how to take responsibility for their own feelings. Because right now, she's getting upset and making you responsible for her feelings. And there's a part of you that I hear wants to take responsibility for her feelings and is, you know, kind of in a dilemma what to do about that. But it's great when you, you know, when the parents learn inner bonding and then teach it to their children so that they learn young what it means to take responsibility for their own feelings. Like your little girl at seven, she could learn that the feeling part of her that's upset is a little girl, and that she, as the seven-year-old adult, needs to take care of those feelings. And what could she do if she had a doll who was upset? What would she do to take care of those feelings? And seven-year-olds can easily tap into a higher source of guidance. And this is very, very important for them to learn to tap into that. They can tap into an imaginary friend or a fairy godmother and ask that higher guidance, you know, what does this little girl in me need right now for me to feel like she's okay and that she's safe? And kids can actually learn to do that so easily. But it's so helpful if you learn to do it and you're a role model for that. So is that helpful to you?
Very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm going to take a couple questions here that people have written in. Della Reese has a couple that says, why are so many children from dysfunctional families today? And that's a good question, but it's because there's so many dysfunctional families. People have not learned how to take responsibility for themselves. And this is why we're hoping that, you know, to get SelfQuest out into the parenting community, for parents to learn how to take responsibility for themselves, so that their kids are not living in dysfunctional families, that their kids learn to do that. And she asked, what would the description be of what is healthy children? What do healthy children look like? And healthy children are children who they're alive, they're passionate, they're interested, they can express their feelings, they know what they feel about things. They're not controlling and manipulative because they're learning from their parents not to be. They're happy. They share their feelings. They let their parents in. They're active. They don't sit around being bored all day. They don't play video games all day. They're following their passion. They're following their joy. And they're tuned into their feelings, and hopefully they're tuned into a higher source of guidance to help them know what's really best for them. But healthy children trust themselves. And unfortunately, there's many adults that don't trust themselves, and therefore they don't learn to trust their children, and they don't teach their children how to trust themselves. And so this is why it's so important for parents to learn inner bonding and be teaching it to their children. Tanya writes in that, "I'm a first-time mom with no child-raising experience and no help outside of my boyfriend, father of my child. What are the most important steps to follow to raise an emotionally healthy, happy child? Also, I had trouble with bullying and dealing with mean kids in school. What is good advice to help my child in the future should she have this problem? I know my response was always that I wanted to leave school or change schools or be homeschooled, but this isn't a solution." Now, I'm not clear on why that's not a solution. I am absolutely thrilled that my daughter is homeschooling my grandsons, because I think that, you know, bullying in school is a huge problem. I think a lot of what goes on in schools is a huge problem. If you don't have the opportunity to homeschool, finding, you know, perhaps there's magnet schools or something where they deal better with bullying. But the main thing, you know, I've talked about raising emotionally healthy, happy children, is for you to learn the inner bonding process and for you to teach it to your child. This is the main thing that you can do to raise a happy, healthy child, is to, for you to be happy and healthy, for you to role model being happy and healthy, and for you to share that with your child. So there's one more question I'm going to take here, and then we'll go back to the phone. This is Paula. I have two girls, one 8-year-old and one 10-year-old. Does it increase their self-esteem when I spend one-on-one time with each of them separately? For example, each month I take one to lunch or dinner, an activity of their choice. Then the next month the other daughter has her turn. Dad gets to choose how he spends time with the other sibling. My husband thinks this is over the top. What do you think? Well, I think it's great. I'm not clear why he thinks it's over the top. You might want to explore with him why he thinks it's over the top for you to spend one-on-one time every other month. I don't think that's a whole lot of time. And I'm wondering why he would think that that is over the top. I think kids do need one-on-one time with their parents, and I think it's great for their sense of self for them to have that one-on-one time just for them, where you're completely present with them. That's one of the things that is so important in loving parenting, is to be very present with your children. And here again is where inner bonding comes in. Because if you're not present with yourself, if you're not tuned into your feelings, you're not tuned into your guidance, you're in your head and you're not present, then you're not going to be present with your children. And that does not make them feel loved, for parents not to be present with them. So I think it's great if you can take your daughters out and you can be fully present with them on a one-on-one basis. I think that's wonderful. Okay, we have a little bit more time. Is there anybody online who would like to do some work with me?
Hello, this is Tracy.
Hello, Tracy. How can I help you?
Yes, thank you. I've been really using your stuff with my 7-year-old daughter and myself, so thank you. Two things, one more bigger and then one small. You know, if you don't have time, that's fine. The first one is, you said something important, I think, before. You know, we don't want to raise people-pleasing children, and then we don't want to raise dominators. You know, so
right.
It's like as she goes to school, you know, I talk to her about, like, I'm more of a dominator controlling type, not so much the people-pleasing type. But I'm trying to have her be balanced. I'm doing the best I can to raise her that way. But it's like, you know, I try to say, hey, you know, be friendly to everybody, you know, try to include people, you know. I mean, I'm trying to give her messages about being kind and including people, but yet I don't want her to be a doormat or a people-pleaser. Yet I am trying to give her some of those messages. So what is the best way to, you know, do that, I suppose? What are the phrases?
Well, you know, once again, teaching your child inner bonding is very, very helpful, because if she learns to be kind to herself, then she's going to naturally be kind to others. And if she's kind to himself, she's naturally not going to be a people pleaser, because it's not kind. You know, when kids learn to really connect with themselves, value themselves, be kind and compassionate towards themselves, then they can extend that out to others. They don't feel like they have to give themselves up in order to please other people, nor do they feel a great need to dominate other people it's about her learning to be her own person. And this is what inner bonding does. It teaches people to be their own person, to tune into their essence, to value who they really are inside. And that will naturally lead her to not be a people pleaser or be dominant.
Yeah, that makes,
does that make sense
that makes,
to you?
That does make sense. Thank you. And the last quick question I had is, she's a great eater. We eat healthy. I put all healthy food on the table, just like you said, you know, so we're 100% on that. The thing is,
right.
It can take her up to 2 hours to eat. She just enjoys it. She sits. She talks. She eats. She grazes a bit. She eats. And it's like it takes so long. So my controlling side comes out and is like, oh, my God, can we at least make it 40 minutes, you know, so that it's not the whole night.
But why is that a problem for you that she takes
long? Well, because she would get home at 5 from school, and then she goes to bed at 7, so she gets good sleep, and that takes up the whole night. There's no time for a bath. There's no time for homework. There's no time for us to, you know, get the house cleaned up. It's just the whole night's that from school to bedtime is eating.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that there may be a problem here of resistance. She may be really, really dawdling as a way to resist maybe your control. And one of the things that I would suggest to you is to back off completely. Let it be her responsibility whether or not she gets in a bath, or her responsibility whether or not she gets in her homework. And, you know, with my kids, I let them know what time I was available to put them to bed. And if they weren't available then, you know, for me to hug them and kiss them and, you know, read to them and spend some time with them. They could do whatever they wanted. If they were tired the next day, that was their problem. But that's when I was available. And so if you just decide, okay, I'm available to put you to bed at 7, and if you're not ready, then, you know, you're on your own, she may change her eating habit. Because right now I'm hearing that if a child is taking 2 hours to eat, she's in a resistance
pattern. 1.5 usually. 1.5.
Okay. But even that's a fairly resistant pattern. So if I were you, I would just back off. You know, sit with
her
for, you know, for 15, 20 minutes as long as you want to, and then go do something else and let her deal with her own time and see what happens.
Okay. That's what I pretty much do, but we'll just let it ride. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it's just weird. But I'll let it ride, you know.
Yeah, make it clear to her that whether or not she gets her homework done is up to her, and it's not your job. And whether or not she gets a bath is up to her. It's not your job. And
yeah.
Make it her responsibility.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have time for one more. Is there one more person who would like to do a little bit of work with me? To press star 7. I hear a lot of people pressing, but I'm not sure what. Okay. I see somebody online here that looks like they're trying to talk to me. Is there anybody?
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead. What's your name?
Dana. In the inner bonding
process. Yeah,
hi. Yes, I was just wondering if you could discuss a little bit moving into the higher guidance. You know, listening to the feelings, listening to the voices, and they're all having their say, and they can be pretty powerful sometimes. And then how is it, can you just make that a little more vivid somehow, experiential, what that is, how you move into really letting compassion fill you when you're in wounded self feelings and in other, you know, all this stuff. How does that transition happen? What does that feel like?
Okay. So what's very, very important here, and it's the basis of inner bonding, is to understand that intention is what governs that. When you're in your wounded self, your intention is to control, is to avoid, is to protect against your feelings. That, when you're in that intention, you cannot connect with guidance. Guidance exists at a fairly high frequency. And the wounded self exists at a very low frequency, and there's no way to connect from that state. In order to have compassion for your wounded self, you cannot be operating in your wounded self, which means you cannot be in the intention to protect, to control, to avoid. You have to consciously move into the intention to learn about what's loving to yourself. And that is the intention that opens you to your guidance, that opens you, that raises your frequency high enough to access the love, the compassion, the wisdom of guidance. And so a lot of people, they get locked into their wounded self because they want to control. They want to avoid their feelings. That's what their highest priority is, avoid
what
my feelings.
Tons of feelings, tons of feelings, anger and this and that and whatever, tons of feelings. But you're not moving. And the same with loving yourself feels like an abstraction, feels remote or something.
Loving yourself means that you're moving into an intention to learn about what you're doing to cause those feelings. If you're feeling anger or guilt or shame or anxiety or depression, what are you doing to cause them? And if you're feeling loneliness and heartache and heartbreak and grief, which are the core feelings, what are those feelings telling you, and what would you need to do to nurture and manage those feelings? And so it's all about learning, that when your intention is to learn about what you're doing to cause your feelings and how to manage your feelings, that's when things will shift. That's when your heart will open. That's when you'll connect with your guidance, and compassion will come into your body and fill your heart, and you'll be able to do the learning you need to do. But it really is about intention. And that can be, a subtle thing. If your wounded self is telling you that it's selfish to love yourself, that's totally a false belief. You're totally locked into your wounded self. It is the most loving thing that you can do, is to want to learn about how you're causing yourself all of those feelings, anger and everything else.
What if that moves into the wounded self saying, you see, it's your fault? You see, you're the blame.
It is your responsibility. The wounded self goes to fault, but the loving adult goes to responsibility. And yes, it is your responsibility. But you don't have to have a judgment. If you go into a judgment about that, you're going to be stuck, because that's what the wounded self does to control, is to judge. But that's still coming from the intention to control. When you're in the intention to learn about love, you don't go into judgment. You go into learning. You go into compassion. So again, it's about intention. And we're about out of time here. There's a lot I could talk about intention, and I'm sure that I will in future webinars. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'm going to just unmute to say goodnight to everybody. Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome.